Welcome to the French Connections Friday edition. Today's date is June 15th, 2007. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and this is another file for everybody to kind of chew on a little bit. Here we've got some information we're going to share with you today. I'm going to bring my partner and friend up a little while from now, Eric Hufschmidt, who's been fighting this big fight with all of us, with me, side by side with me, and I got to tell you all, you know, this is a battle that's hotting up in many ways because the eggs in the air are not sustainable. They can't keep this juggling act going, and the financial system is under terrible pressure. And one of the things I'd like everybody who's interested in some of the facts about our finances to take a look at the bond market. The bond market is having serious problems right now, and basis point changes in it are causing some serious problems with the treasuries and bonds, in fact. And as I told you before, one of the things that you're going to see cause most of the political activity is going to be financial. And it often follows this way. When the finances go sour and they can't keep that farce going any longer, the other things start unwinding. And it looks like we're going to get some real serious problems showing up shortly. Countries around the world are dumping the dollar. The handwriting is already on the wall. The American economy and the American republic, the U.S. of A, is dead in the water. And people that I've been listening to or reading about on the internet think that Ron Paul from within the system is going to save it. And I've come out firmly against thinking that he's going to. And I've said before, I don't know if the man is genuine or not. It just seems like he's still trying to blow smoke up my behind and tell me that Bin Laden's behind these events and telling me that the war on terror somehow has validity. And I just wish, and I'm calling on Mr. Paul, and I'm calling on my supporters to email his campaign and say, tell the whole truth there, Ron Paul. Because we all want to support you if you're going to tell the whole facts and all the truth. You've got a big enough soapbox now to make waves. If everybody out there encouraged him to be honest, maybe that would tip the balance and he'd start telling the entire story. 9/11, the fact that that this whole scam in Washington has been perpetrated by a planned event. This is not by accident, any of this stuff. Why doesn't he start talking about the Zionist influence that's in our executive and about apex influence within the Congress? And talk about the real problems that we need to fix to take the country back. To say that the stuff he's been saying, which I've watched every video he's put out, I don't miss one. He hasn't gone to the heart of the issues that are going to make a difference in the final analysis. And this is the kind of responses that we all need to hear from Ron Paul, I believe. Now, everybody's out there saying support him, and I'd love to do that. I really would. But I certainly can't support somebody who is still trying to con me somehow. It's a shame. And the other thing is, I seriously don't believe that the system we're working with is fixable in its present condition. In other words, I don't think, short of a complete redo, we can continue on in the same path. I don't think the Democrat and Republican parties, the way they've been structured, can survive this next phase if we're going to fix the country. They have to be eradicated. They have to be made irrelevant. They have to be purged of all Zionist influence. And if you were to do that, you would have to eradicate both of those parties. Case in point, Melman over on the Republican side and Rahm Emanuel over on the Democrat side. Take a peek at these two people. Look at their histories, and you'll find out exactly why I'm saying that. But That being said, I'm going to bring up my guest right away, and it's been a while since we've had Eric on the show because Eric's been busy with his business as well as being the webmaster for the many of the websites that we have available for you to learn on. And so I want to bring up Eric. Are you with me?
Yes, here I am.
Nice to have you back, Eric. It's been a while since you did a file with us, and I'm glad you're here today. How you feeling there, buddy?
Well, I'm all right. Yeah, I know. The thing you said about Ron Paul, though, people have to realize that they use the excuse that, maybe he doesn't want to cause trouble. He just wants to get publicity, and it's probably best not to talk too much yet. You know, if we had followed that advice, where would we be today? If me and you and Bolin had been, you know, people would stop this. That's a trick to say people, oh, they're not ready. The public's not ready. Don't say anything yet. Just wait and wait and wait. If everybody just came out years ago and said, we're not waiting, let's talk now, we could have had it over with.
Well, Eric, you know, one of the things, the strategies that we used, and I don't think it was an enunciated strategy early on, but by forcing people to look at this issue or forcing people to talk about Zionism, by calling them out, some cases calling them shills or calling them useful idiots, we forced people to either face the problem or get caught as a shill. And I think that kind of pressure has worked. Look at the response. I said it last show, 1,700 hits for Zionism when we started. Look at it now. It's almost 4 million. I mean, we're not solely responsible for that, but we certainly put a lot of pressure on a lot of people, didn't we?
Well, yeah, that's what I was, when I first came out with my video, that I would be getting complaints. Oh, you shouldn't be criticizing the media. You shouldn't be criticizing this or that. But that's the point of investigating a crime. You identify who's lying. That's the whole purpose of it. So you should identify the people. That's what you're supposed to do. I mean, imagine a detective saying, yeah, he's solving the crime. It's the New World Order. What good does that do you?
Well, you're not going to be able to find anybody with a desk that says, I'm a member of the New World Order, but you can find Zionists, and you can find them in the APEC committees, you can find them in the B'nai B'rith societies, you can find them in the Jewish American Committee Congress, and you can find them in the pro-Israeli trade commissions, and you can find them in the Lubavitcher synagogues. You can find who these Zionists are, and so identifying Zionists within the groups that they move in and the circles they move in is a doable thing.
Yeah, and that's what we should be doing, getting the names, getting their addresses, and saying these are the people lying to us. And it's becoming extremely obvious now. It was confusing in 2001, 2002, because, you know, a lot of people were truly naive back then. And so when somebody said something stupid, sometimes it was just because they didn't know any better. But if you look at this, just in 2007, what's been going on lately, it is such a clear dividing line between those of us who are talking about this and the rest. It's so obvious now. They're separating it. See, before you couldn't figure out who to trust and who wasn't, because it was such a mixture of naive people and dumb people and people just getting into it. But now,
well, Erica, you've been charged with the unfair accusation that your video didn't include the Israelis' involvement. But you made that video at the end of 2001 and into 2002, and in fact, you didn't have clear evidence that they did that either, did you, at the time?
Well, I didn't have a lot, but see, before I had my book and video out, I had web pages where I mentioned it. But I didn't have much detail. You know, it was just, I could see that Israel was involved, and I had some information on the website. But then when I did the book and video, you know, I got so tired of listening to the anti-Semite complaints, I said, oh, forget this. I'll just explain 9/11 first, because it's hard to, in 2002, it was difficult to even convince people that those buildings were blown up. You know, you couldn't, you had to get past that point before you could get into the who did it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured, forget this, I'll just put in what I know, because I didn't realize how big the Zionist movement was. You know, I just thought it was just some Israelis or with some Americans, and I thought it was just, you know, a little crime gang. I didn't realize the extent of how big it was.
Well, Eric, how big is it? I mean, it goes into everything. I mean, you know, I was watching on my news over here. One of the things that I said to you one interview we did about a year ago, it's not George Bush, it's not for Cheney, it's not Rumsfeld, because how in the world could they be controlling the press that comes out over my airwaves here in France? The fact of the matter is, you are as controlled in my news reports as you are in the United States, and that is not George Bush controlling that.
Well, that's right, plus the media of Australia, Canada, New Zealand, it's all over. And Bush couldn't do this. The CFR, this Council on Foreign Relations, couldn't be in control of the whole world's media. The people in control of the media are people like Sumner Redstone, Murdoch, Rupert Murdoch, Sam Newhouse. These are the people that are in control of it. And it's so obvious. Just look at who they are. Look at who their friends are. And then you can see they're in control. That's the reason the media is lying to us. It's them. It's them, and they're all part of this Zionist movement. And this movement is gigantic. And it's basically got a center of operation down in Israel where people can be trained and then dispatched to different parts of the world if they need to. Money can be sent to people if they need to. Plus, there's people within our own government. They can even divert money from federal agencies to help these people.
And they have used the public purse of the United States to forward their crimes. If you take a look at the Dov Zolkheim's, stewardship over in the Pentagon's controller office, they can't account for $2.6 trillion, Eric. I mean, the amount of money that we're talking there is incredible. But just the gifts alone we give to Israel every year, and the free loans that we don't ever make them pay back for military equipment, and it's amazing the amount of resources that we expend on these crooks.
Oh yeah, if you think about what the 20th century might have been like if all the money that has been wasted on these wars and these weapons and these terrorists and the security procedures we put ourselves through, think of all that money, all that engineering, all that science, if it had gone into something useful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could have such a beautiful world, nice cities and gardens, fresh food. Instead, all we got today are mounds and mounds of weapons and waste dumps from radioactive production of the nuclear bombs. Oh, that's all we've been doing the past 100 years. Preparing and fighting for wars and trying to defend ourselves from these mysterious terrorists and mysterious Nazis. But what you can do now, see, what's happening now is the Internet, they've been getting away with this because of secrecy. This is the only thing that's been protecting them, is that they have been in the background. And no one really knew much about what the Zionist movement used to be.
Well, you remember back in 72 when Abu Nidal did the Munich Olympics and killed the Israelis and whatnot?
Right.
Well, what we've found out since, and documents have come to the light that Abu Nidal was in fact an operative for the Mossad, one of his special ops. And it was actually killing people to bring the idea of terrorism to the airwaves. And I mean, that's not new, is it? I mean, we've learned a lot of experiences like this, haven't we?
Yes, but back in that day, back in 1972, there was no internet. There were almost no real computers to speak of. There were no CD-ROMs or DVDs. So everybody's source of information about that was coming from a small handful of reporters. And so this is what has changed since 1972. People back then were dependent upon this small group of Zionist Jews to tell them what's going on in the world. Now we have this internet. We can produce CD-ROMs, DVDs. We can bypass them. They don't have control any longer. And now we can expose them, and it's happening all over. And you can see that in 2007, it is so bad that they have completely separated from us, and we can now rapidly identify these people because of the separation. It's because it's becoming so clear. You can just go to one of their sites once you identify them, like 911blogger.com. You go there and you look at who they promote. It's the same people over and over, the same lies. Like right now, they're bringing up a Gore Vidal talking about a video that he made in 2005. It was an interview he did in 2005, and they're bringing it up again because he's giving publicity to David Ray Griffin's book, The New Pearl Harbor. You have to ask yourself, why would this site bring that up now? It's because David Ray Griffin will blame Bush for everything, not Israel, not Zionism, and neither will Gore Vidal.
Well, what do you think Griffin Griffin's motivation is. I think he was honest to be a Zionist.
No, I think he was completely honest in the beginning, and they were trying to use them. This is one of the problems they have. In a way, it's a problem, but it's the reason they've been so successful all these decades. They find somebody who they can fool into believing something, and then he goes around promoting it, and he has such sincerity that people believe him. David Ray Griffin seems to be this way. He was one of those people who truly believed that he was investigating 9/11, but they were quietly manipulating him on the side. They were trying to steer him away from me, it turns out. And it turned out that the day before he was supposed to turn his book into the publisher, he decided he ought to just see what my book is. It happens that he lives 2 miles away from me. So he decided he'll just drive over, pick my book up, and take a look before he gets his book to the publisher. Now, the book had already been reviewed. It had already gotten great reviews by Michael Meacher of London and, Howard Zinn. So the book was all ready. David was just holding it just to make sure there wasn't any last changes. So he decided at the last moment just to see my book. And when he saw it, he thought, oh, my goodness, I got to change my book. And so he stayed up all night, he told me later, to add this new material in about the demolition of the towers and all this. So I think what it was is that he was being used. He was just like Lee Harvey Oswald and Tim McVeigh.
Or possibly like Stephen Jones was with his Scholars for 9/11 Truth group.
Well, it could be the same thing. See, the best thing from their point of view is to stay hidden in the background and find some sucker to do the work for them. And the best sucker is someone who believes what he's doing, because that way he's completely honest. He's not lying.
Well, see, in my case, Eric, with this information, of course, I was completely oblivious to this nonsense. I didn't know any of this stuff back in 2001 or 2. And when I started reading, I mean, you told me about some of it, and I was really reluctant. I didn't want to go with this stuff at all, especially since many of the people I've known over my lifetime are from the Jewish community, and I find them still to this day to be genuinely kind and loving people. However, when I started looking myself at other sources other than what you were telling me, in other words, I took a look at what Henry Ford said. I took a look at what Nestor Webster wrote. I got my hands on what's his name, Myron Fagan's work, and on what's it, the other one there?
Benjamin Friedman.
Yeah, and I looked through all these things, and I said, holy smokes, this is not just someone's opinion that I talk to regularly. This has a long and proven history. A factual representation. Now, recently we put up a little thing by a caliph that was talking about these very facts, Eric, back in 85. I mean, the exact stuff that we discuss on the French Connection and put on our website, this man was talking about 22 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, and see, this is one of the problems I face is that, see, back then, who would have heard about that guy? There was no internet. But you see, everyone will come to the same conclusions. If you look into this, you come to the same conclusions because that's what the evidence points to. I didn't know about Henry Ford's book either when I got into this, but you discover it yourself when you start looking at why is the media lying. You look into who's controlling the media. You come to the same conclusion. You don't even need to know what Henry Ford said. You'll come to the same conclusion yourself if you just look at these people. And if you look at this 9/11 truth movement, you'll come to the same conclusion eventually. So this is why they're running into major problems, because people all over the world now have access to this information and they can look at it on their own, and they're all going to eventually come to the same conclusion. Nothing can stop this.
That's right.
There is no way they can stop this. No matter how much more of their deception they put out, it's too late because...
Well, actually, Eric, when they try to put more deception on top of it, it actually makes people see it more clearly.
Yeah, especially when it starts separating like this. Right now, it is so clear that they are separating from, you know, they're completely avoiding us or insulting us, yet they promote other people over and over. Like Gore Vidal, Alex Jones had him on his radio show. Why will he go on Alex Jones? But it's to promote Bush doing everything. It's the same pattern. You see, after a while, you recognize it. It's always blame a couple people. Not a very large group. It's always just a couple of people.
But even, you know, even people like Jones are having, and this is when it gets really interesting, Eric, even the reluctant criminals, in order to save whatever amount of credibility they've got left, have to do some of this exposing on their own. Otherwise, they've lost it all.
Well, that's a sign that they're losing. So you see, when you see them on the defensive, that's a sign they're losing it. Because they didn't used to be on the defensive. If you look in, right after the attack occurred, there was no defense on their part. There was none of this defending Israel or complaining about people who talk about Zionism. Now the situation has reversed and they are desperate to deal with these accusations that they're holding back and they're lying. So this is a sign they're losing. And what are they going to do to get out of this mess? Think about it. If you were in their position, how do you get out? Because you can't stop this. You can't stop. They've lost control of the media. That is what they've been depending on all these decades.
Well, the only thing I can see them doing, Eric, is just pulling the plug on everything and having the thing turn into a mess.
Chaos, right. You see, that is one thing, what you might call like a doomsday scenario, where they just say, let's just create chaos, because in chaos, the people who will survive are the ones who can work together, the ones who can, you know, the ones that have intelligence and can work together. The people that can't work together are going to suffer the most when there's ever a problem. So they could possibly try that, but, you know, that's, I don't know if they'd have the guts to pull that one off.
Well, you know, they're talking about, you know, another attack here, and, I mean, I could possibly see some of these chuckle-headed policemen from inner-city police departments going out and thumping people and rounding them up on orders from above. I can see that happening because, by and large, most of these police aren't thinking on their own. And you know, I can see problems with a lockdown of America. I could see them trying it.
Well, yeah, with America. See, this is another thing that you have to consider. America is the only real supporter of Israel. If they push this too far and destroy America, America is already losing its engineering, its manufacturing, its science. The military is going to soon get to the point, you know, nobody even wants to join it, where they don't really want to do anything. Once America gets to so disintegrated that it can't even support Israel, they're vulnerable. Once that happens, even who's going to keep Europe under control?
Well, they're putting a lot of their hope on Sarkozy, I think.
Yeah, but you see, would Sarkozy be able to get the French to go down to Iraq and do all these bombings?
Well, who knows? I don't know, Eric. They're like rabid animals over here for this guy. It's really awful to watch.
Yeah, but that's not the same as being willing to go down to the Middle East and just start killing people. You see, there's a big difference. Americans went in there willingly. All you had to do was, you know, make a 9/11 attack and they go rushing over there. But I don't, you never saw that, even after 9/11, you didn't see that kind of support from the Europeans. And I don't think any other nation would be that dumb to do this. And so, they've got a problem. America is their only real source of support. And without America, who's going to protect Israel? And the world is rising up against them. The Indians, the Chinese. I'm sure people in Russia must be talking about it by now. And so, what are they going to do? They've got a dilemma on their hand, and I think that's why you can hear what sounds like panic in some of their voices, like Alex and all the people that are criticizing us. They're getting desperate, and they don't know what else to do.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Eric. The one of the biggest complaints against me is that I ran away to France.
Well, I know this is what I mean. They're like scraping the bottom of the barrel, finding, is there something we can say here? Is there anything? And it's getting desperate. And so I think what we're going to do is we're going to see America continue to lose its manufacturing, and it's going to continue to get worse, and Americans will continue to start wondering, what are we doing in this war? When's this war going to stop? You know, and it's going to somehow, eventually, I think Zionism is on its way up. I don't see how they can save it.
Well, you know, I don't think it'll go peacefully, and based upon what I do know now about Armenia, about World War I, II, about Russia, about their propensity and their capacity to commit horrendous acts of murder, I don't see that they would be afraid to try and stir up more murderous events everywhere to save themselves. And I wonder, in America, let's start with America, are we going to be able to identify clearly who these people are? We've talked a lot about families like the Crown family up in Chicago area, and I'm certain there are elements of that family involved in Boleyn's repression, but also the Miller family and the Simons, and we've got Deborah Simon running around with $100,000, giving money to loose change and paying off Carl Schwartz, and the kind of, we've actually got to put names and faces to some of this so people know who did it.
Yeah, I know. We've got a lot of them already on the website, but the problem is that there are so many of them. You almost can just say, you know, just take everybody in the media. Take everybody who gets publicity. It's almost everybody that is getting any sort of publicity at all, because that's why they get it. That's why they're getting the publicity. Even the people like Gore Vidal, who people think are just, you know, harmless, meaningless philosophers or something. You know, this is why they're brought out on television. Aaron Russo. Well, you know, why do you think he gets this publicity? And then if you just follow all their friends, and then you look at, I mean, then you have to look at the federal agencies, the CIA. Who created it? Where did it come from? The FBI. Who created that? Who's running it? They never solve any crimes. You know, if you look at the FBI, they just do some trivial things once in a while to make it look like they're doing something. But they're protecting it. They've been protecting it for decades. They used to pretend there was no such thing. They were insisting that there was no such thing as organized crime. And so, well, you know, there are so many of them, and it's so big. You almost have to just start all over. You can't just put in Ron Paul and expect a change.
Well, I mean, let's talk about Ron again here. You know, I like I said in the beginning monologue, Eric, I would love a reason to trust and hope for this man's abilities here, but I don't see anything but smoke being blown up my fanny here. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, I'm fighting against all the liars, and I'm fighting against people lying to me about 9/11 and bin Laden and Iraq. And of course, he's not signing up to say that those are good things, but he's not telling the truth either.
Well, that's right, and it's the same as all of the others, too. He's just like all of the other politicians, and so why would we even trust him? And there's no point. A lot of people will say, well, we've got to pick somebody. We don't have to just pick one of them. We can say we don't want any single one of them. This is the other thing that if you listen to Alex Jones, Jeff Rentz, Webster Tarpley, over and over, every single one have one thing in common, and that is they try to frighten you into thinking you can't do anything. That this new world order is so powerful. They don't want you to just say the word no. That's all you have to say is no. We don't want any of them. We don't want this war. Just say no. They don't want you to realize that's all we have to do. They keep saying it's a new world order. They're going to chip you. They're going to put chips under your skin. They never say to you, well, you can just say no to them and it's over with. It's that simple. You can say, no, I'm not buying your Newsweeks and your Time magazines anymore. And just drive them out of business.
That's right.
I mean, we can do it. We're not helpless little animals. But they want you to believe that. They're frightening everybody to death.
But, you know, I'll give you an example of me thinking no and still not doing it. I mean, I don't want to give support to a dirtbag like what's his name, Drudge. But I still go to his site to see what kind of nonsense he puts up.
Well,
now, you see, here's the thing, Eric. I don't want to support this slimy sack of crud, but then I go to his website to see what he's putting up there. So
yeah, but that's not supporting him. That's not buying his the things that advertise on his site.
I'm still being exposed to his opinion, though, and that is kind of an under the radar kind of support.
If you're going to his site to see what kind of lies he's producing, that's the same as a crime investigator who's watching what the criminal gang is doing. That's not the same as believing it and going there naively and believing it. Because I'll look at 9/11 blogger, but I don't go there to see what they're saying. I look at, well, who are they letting us realize is part of this group next? I mean, it's a way to, when you're trying to figure out who's doing the crime, of course you look at what they're saying because they and their friends are the criminals, and you can then identify them, and you can see what they're saying that is fooling other people. I mean, go to 9/11 blogger, you see now they're even promoting Loren Murray again. Why is it always her that gets the promotion? She's been going to Vancouver. And she always travels around, and then Dave Von Kleist and Joyce Riley are also the experts on uranium. Why do these certain people, why are they in this approved list when none of us get it? Why her?
Can I tell you something, Eric? I have never been invited to any conference. I've never been invited to any, I almost don't do any radio shows unless it's I don't know, South Africa's had me on a few times. But nobody wants me on their radio show.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. This is what people have to think about this. This is not a coincidence. I mean, you could say some people have preferences. You can't expect every station, every person to care about me or you or Bolin. But it's universal.
Yeah.
This cannot be a coincidence when it's everywhere. You can, for example, William Rodriguez is traveling around Europe again. They're funding him again to go around. Loren Murray gets funding. Everybody else gets funding. It's not just once in a while they pick them and once in a while they pick us. It's always them, never us. Always. And this is what I mean when I say it's becoming so obvious as to the groups. They are now, it's like two football teams. They are now separated on the field. You can now see them. Before, they were so well mingled with the rest of us, it was very difficult to figure out who you could trust. But it's becoming clear now. All you have to do is go to their sites, look at who they promote, and look at all of their friends, and there you are. And you find out it's enormous, this group.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Eric. You remember back when the Scott Muffkaka was over there trying to pee on both of our legs, and then he turned his crap on Bolin. But we knew right away that this guy was a Zionist plant. We knew it. We knew what he was doing was I mean, come on, it became so obvious over time. And what does he do? He hightails it over to AFP. American Free Press, for those of you who don't know, and starts promoting Michael Collins Piper's books. And, of course, when we told the world about the AFP and how they had been selectively editing or not allowing certain articles to be put on their site or sending Bolin on a wild goose chase down to Venezuela, when there were incredible stories that Bolin wanted to do in America and Europe, and they didn't want any part of that. And when all this stuff started coming out, when we started saying it, boy, did these people get really nasty.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. When you see people running, getting jobs at AFP, Mark Glenn is now writing for them. It's like, what is this? They take all the people. Once we expose them, they go to AFP? I mean, what is this? It's like their cover's blown. You may as well, you know, work for the newspaper because they're not maybe on the Internet, or perhaps they don't know yet. That's what it almost seems like. It says, well, come on over here. Our readers, they're not even on the Internet. They won't have heard the accusations yet.
Well, you know, it's like the Northwoods thing that we debunked. And I got to say, it wasn't us that got that original information. Carol Valentine put us onto that it was a nonsensical, didn't make any logical sense at all that the Northwoods document was even valid. But when we put that up, we caused a big stir. But here's the next big fraud that just came out, this Project Cyanide. Cyanide is a big Mark Glenn lie that they're trying to divert and deflect attention away from Israel murdering all those prisoners of war, which James Innes absolutely says as clear as a bell that was the reason. They were only 10 miles off the coast of this murder scene, this genocide of these soldiers with a listening ship, Eric. Come on, they could hear people screaming for their lives from 10 miles away.
Well, yeah, plus Michael Piper and the others, Mark Glenn, are also trying now to scare people to death because of that accident, that car accident that killed Richard Thompson, who may have just died on his own. Because my grandfather, one of my grandfathers, when he was 78, was driving home from work and had a heart attack, and his car drifted off the side of the road. He didn't die from it, but because traffic was so bad, it was only he was just idling and went into a, like a off the road.
Or he could have fallen asleep. It was
at
night.
The thing is, it could have been just an accident. But what he was going on the radio saying is trying to frighten people. Oh, this is what happens when you talk. This is what they do. Those mysterious people when you talk about the USS Liberty. And whether he was killed by someone. They don't really care, but they're using it as an opportunity to frighten the remaining people who are still alive, part of that USS Liberty crew, into thinking, you better be quiet or you might end up like Richard Thompson, dead.
And maybe that was a whole setup to start with. The guy comes out with a big lying story to make it sound valid. They put him to death, and then they also use it to frighten the rest of the people who are around. But you look, James Innes, officer of the deck, he spent 40 years at the front lines of exposing this. That guy, what's his name, Boston, the commander, he got a medal of valor for his actions that day, and well deserved it. But he wasn't standing out there screaming at bloody murder for 40 years like James Innes. And you remember Jim Innes telling us in a couple of interviews, back in the day, nobody wanted to hear about this. Nobody. I mean, he was still trying to fight for justice when no one wanted to hear his story, Eric.
Yeah, and see, now, because of the Internet, though, the situation is much different. You see, back in that day, think about what you had to do to talk about it. You had to just stand in front of a person and talk with your mouth, and hopefully, if you had a couple pictures on paper to show them. I mean, it was difficult. Think about it. It was difficult. Today, you can put together videos, audio interviews, photographs with links. It's so easy to expose it. This is what has changed dramatically in the past decades. This ability to expose them, and this is also what's destroying that whole white supremacist group and this whole idea that there's Nazis out there hiding in the bushes. You see, if you look at these people, the Peter Shanks and the Vanguards.
Did you hear that again? Did you listen again to that thing?
I didn't listen to it again, but I know the Peter Shank one. See, here's again. This is another pattern you'll find with these people. People like Peter Shank. After I went on a show once, I didn't, you know, it was something like in 2006. And, you know, one of the things he will support is that we did go on the moon. He's not saying he doesn't know. He's not saying he has no opinion. We did, we did go on the moon, he says. He's just like Mike Rivero. He's just like all of the others. There is none of them that will admit that maybe we didn't. They're not even saying maybe. They're saying, no, we did. He's just like all the other white supremacists, all the other liars in the 9/11 truth movement, trying desperately to get us to believe Apollo astronauts did go there. And you'll see the same with the National Vanguards and the Stormfronts. They all have the same behavior. This is the other thing you'll start noticing is as you look between them all, it's all as if the same writers are the people guiding it. They're all getting the same instructions on what to do and how to do it and what
to say.
Well,
I've always contended Southern Poverty Law has got their fingers in that pie.
It could be, and it could also be, you know, the other groups, but they look, they're so similar to one another, and it's the same type of lies over and over. And what it seems to be is they're trying to create the impression that scattered around the world, like bacteria or viruses, are these mysterious anti-Semites. And the anti-Semites, they're always, almost always white people. And they're always against the Jews. Now, and they may also be against some blacks and homosexuals. But you see, they're trying to create the impression that they're these white people hiding around everywhere about to attack Jews simply because they hate them. And now, the other thing that's funny is they're doing the same thing with the Chinese to some extent. A couple nights ago, I was listening to a little bit of the Rick Adams show, and some callers were calling in, trying desperately to convince people that the Chinese might be doing what Hitler did in Hungary. They said, this one caller was saying, in Hungary, during the war, Hitler sent some Nazi troops across as civilians, pretending to be civilians. And then once they were in Hungary, they could then, you know, become soldiers again. So, and he's saying, well, you know, there's a lot of Chinese up here in Toronto, and they're coming into Canada. They're in the universities. They're in the, you know, they're pretending to be Chinese citizens, but we don't know. They could be military people from communist China, and they're getting ready to attack us. And this is what Alex Jones was saying back in 1999, that the Chinese are hiding in Mexico and other places ready to attack us. You see, this is another thing I think they're trying to do. They're trying to get us to start getting frightened of China and blame China for things.
Yeah.
And the Chinese so far either haven't paid any attention to this or don't care because they're not defending themselves. But this is another trick. Don't look over at Israel. Don't look at Zionism. Instead, look at those Chinese. What are they doing here in the country? Are they really citizens or are they military people ready to attack us? I mean, this is so stupid. But you can see the callers themselves. It wasn't the guest of the show. It was the callers trying to do this. Because, you know, the guest might start talking about Zionism. And then the callers jump in. Well, did you see the Chinese? And see, what it is, it's an attempt to fool people into looking the other direction. Look the wrong way. Look over towards China.
Well, that's, you see, the with Alex Jones, I mean, he's got every La Raza is in every Hispanic home today. If you want to listen to him, and the fact is, he's saying that this immigration bill, and I've looked into the immigration bill, it's a bad idea. And see, here's the interesting thing about what he talks about on that show. There is truth in the things he says, and so if you go and look into it, you're going to say, but what it is it goes way beyond. Do you remember the 1999 show that he did? We put it up on the site about Y2K.
Yeah, that's when he was also saying the Chinese were about to attack.
Right, and he's screaming that all the nuclear plants are about to blow. And that we're all going to be irradiated because all of these plants are going to melt down, and that we're all in trouble. And he says, I just got to report back that one of the plants is already going. And I mean,
well, he does that with,
you know.
Yeah, well, what he does with the Mexicans is he creates, again, it's fear and anger and hatred. And he's trying to stir up fights. He never explains anything. No one ever explains why the Mexicans are coming in here. I mean, I can see it around me. They're coming in here because there's jobs everywhere. And a lot of people will say they're undercutting us in wages. That's only true in some cases. That's not true in all cases. They're coming up, they're getting jobs, and then they're telling their friends, hey, come on over. This is great.
Well, I mean, you know, the clandestine jobs does undermine the entire wage base.
Yeah, but they're not all clandestine. Like the country club out in Santa Barbara where you can't even afford a membership unless you're super rich, they've got Mexicans all over the place. They could easily afford. They can't use the excuse that they're trying to save money because they're on a tight budget. They're not hiring the Mexicans just to save a few pennies. And you'll see that, you'll see them in the construction crews, the factories, the restaurants. They're not all.
Yeah, but Eric, I'm going to tell you something. We have a much smaller immigration problem here in France, and people on minimum wage over here is nine U.S. dollars an hour.
Yeah,
and
I know what you mean, but I'm just saying you can't say that's true in all cases.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think clandestine immigration is a good idea, but and I'm sure that you don't think it is either.
I think
basically, and this is what they did here in France back in the 70s, and they did it in America now too. They brought in Algerians here, and they put them in ghettos. They put them in these high-rise apartments all together. They allowed them to deteriorate. They took a lot of their jobs away from them, especially when the economy went south. And now all the social problems that are happening, they're blaming on the people that are suffering from them. In other words, they're blaming poverty on the people that are living there. When it's, how do you blame a poor person for poverty?
Well, they're stirring up fights. But
right.
They're doing that with the Mexicans, though. That's what I'm saying. They're trying to make people angry at the Mexicans rather than ask what's really going on here.
Right.
No, there is no analysis of why the Mexicans are coming in. They are trying to make it sound like they're forcing themselves on us. And what I'm saying is they're not forcing themselves. They are being given jobs. And you can say they're undercutting the jobs, but that doesn't explain why are they getting them in the first place. Who is giving it to them? It's the white Americans who are giving them jobs.
That's right.
And no, he will not talk about that.
No.
He won't even say who is feeding himself. Who is feeding Alex Jones? It's a lot of Mexicans. Who's doing a lot of the work? He never gets into that. He never says who's bringing them in. Who is encouraging that? And in California, it's even worse because somebody in our school system is trying to separate them into Spanish-only classes. The little kids in elementary school, not the adults.
And, you know, little kids can pick up a language toot sweet, man.
Oh, yeah, and so why would anybody do that? Somebody, he never looks into who is responsible for this. Because I'm sure if you look at who's responsible, you'll find somewhere in the background there are some Zionist Jews doing it on purpose in order to create racial problems. Because it does create problems when they grow up not knowing English.
That's right.
And not only that, but it creates problems for the Mexicans who do know English, and they're looking at these other Mexicans and thinking, what is going on? I can't even talk to this guy, and he's a Mexican.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know English. So it looks like what they do is they bring the Mexican issue, the Chinese issue, and these others in just to cause fights. And that's what the white supremacist groups do. They try to create fights between whites and blacks and whites and homosexuals and whatever else. It's this constant create fights, create fear. And if people just wise up to this and realize this is all a trick, stop being fearful, stop hiding under your chair, and just to start saying no and to start telling the police, do your job already. Stop
well,
this.
I mean, since if someone's here illegally, Eric, and this is how bad it has gotten, if someone's here illegally, people at the top have said you don't even have the right to arrest them in your local community.
Well, that yeah, but you have to ask who created these laws? Who did this?
But see, the fact is, the ultimate arbiter of the legal system in the arrest level is the local county sheriff, not the feds.
Yeah, but why would he get these laws? Why would who's influencing him? There's an influence there. These people aren't just coincidentally doing this same thing all over.
And this is my exact point. I'm trying to segue here into what's happened with Boleyn. Now, of course, if you take a look at the influence that has been exerted on local police departments through the ADL and the JDO and the Jewish American Congress and the rest of these groups, you'll see that they've actually sent training films and how to identify hateful people, and the police departments around the country are being, even at the smaller community level, are being bombarded with propaganda from these Jewish groups.
Well, that's right, and that's what we have to realize. They're being influenced. And this is what they've been depending on, this influence, this hiding in the background and then influencing people and manipulating them. And so if we just start, people, if they just realize the technique they're using, that's all you need to know is look at the technique, understand the technique, this manipulation, this creating fear and hatred, this creating fights between everything you can imagine. It's not just races, it's religions, it's men and women, old and young people, businesses, and employees everywhere. They don't care what the fight is as long as you're fighting.
Yeah.
And as once you realize this and you just say, no, I'm not going to fight anymore. I'm not interested. I'd rather know what's going on. Let's do an analysis of it. That's all they have to start doing. Just say.
Well, you know, look at our website for a good example, Eric. I mean, we've got everything from soup to nuts on this site. I mean, we talk about the individual criminals that are involved. We talk about their network. We talk about the result of their crimes. We talk about the victims. We talk about solutions. We talk about the history. We talk about what we believe is happening, what the planning stages are. I mean, there's nary a single subject that is not connected to understanding this crime that we have not looked into.
Right, I know. That's the other thing. If people just start looking around and comparing, you know, our websites to the others, they're going to realize that you're getting a distorted view on all of the others. Even though we don't have everything, at least, you know, we're not trying to twist everything over into just one particular frame of mind. And it's, you'll see the other ones, it's the same thing over and over and over.
Yeah, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld.
Oh, yes. It doesn't make sense. You see, that's what's different about it. There's doesn't make sense. They can't explain things. They leave you in everything mysterious. Everything's always, you're always wondering when you're done reading it, who's actually behind it? How do we stop it? How do we improve it? Because it doesn't do you any good to talk about it. That's all they want you to do is talk and be fearful. They never say, well, how do we fix it? How do we make the world better? That's what good does it do to talk about it if you don't improve it? And the only way we're going to improve it is to realize we've got to get rid of the Zionist movement. The whole thing. We can't just get rid of Bush or Cheney. The entire thing has to go.
That's right.
They've got to be thrown out of the media, the banking, the schools. all of the nations, we have to make the decision. We don't want this anymore.
Yeah. And
the whole idea of it is stupid. And if we're going to support a Zionist movement, why not support a Catholic Zionist movement where they decide, well, they want Greece to become a home for Catholics and start a war over there for them? I mean, this is stupid. We have to decide, we're sick of this, we don't want this anymore, get rid of it.
Well, and see, here's the bottom line. It's really not, of course, the smaller details of this are complicated, but the story itself, Eric, is not all that complicated. How some of the operations have been carried out might get complicated a little bit, but the story itself is quite simple, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just the size of it that's hard to believe. It's not that the concept is that difficult. It's when you realize how big it is. People just wonder, how could it have gotten so big and they never noticed?
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, just to refresh people a little bit. The way it got so big is that people at the lower levels of this, when they're first starting out, let's say in media or politics or law enforcement or in the judiciary, they are courted in the beginning by certain people within the higher levels. And they are compromised on their way up the ladder. And in fact, you don't make it to the mid and upper levels until you've been compromised.
Yeah, they seem to be. What's interesting is that the Zionist movement for decades seems to have gotten. If you read the Protocols of Zion, you'll see that it's like a deliberate plan on their part. You know, get into things that you can compromise people with, like the prostitution, the gambling. You set these places up, like Larry Silverstein's strip club, and then they're like traps, and you wait for people to come in. You might even lure them in. You might invite a politician over, and you do this, and through time you try to lure them into doing more and more until you've got something that you can blackmail them over.
Well, like what you saw they did to Marion Barry, for example, if they want to get somebody who has some sort of proclivities that are already there to begin with, they just nurture those proclivities, Eric.
That's right. That seems, and even Kay Griggs was saying this is the same thing that goes on within our military. Probably by the Zionists in the military, not the regular.
Well, she said her ex-husband was courted right in at the university level.
Yeah, because he came from a family that was poor, and so they were offering, hey, here's a great job for your son, and you know, they could take advantage of people this way. You know, here's a great job, just do this, and then they lure him into doing a little bit more each time, and pretty soon he's blackmailed. And she was saying, you know, they were also raping him even as a kid, you know, traumatizing him. So this, you know, what they're doing though is they're looking for people that they can use and abuse. And those are the people we find getting promotion in the media. Those are the ones that are like often the politicians. Those are the ones that, and what's interesting is this thing about Paris Hilton may help explain what's going on with our police departments. That sheriff, I think his name was Baca, Lee Baca or something?
Yeah, Lee Baca, yep.
He tried to get Paris Hilton out of jail early. Now, forget about the issue of whether she should be in jail in the first place. You have to ask yourself, why would a sheriff get involved in this case and try to get her out? When, you know, there's a real crimes going on, what would he even care for? And who is this guy? And then you look and you realize, you know, a lot of these sheriffs are elected by the citizens. He's involved in things like Scientology. There's this website that calls themselves Police One, supposedly for policemen. A year ago they were calling this guy a nut, thinking this guy is nutty. These sheriffs, this could be the way that the Zionists are getting control of our police departments. They are deciding who to give funding to run for sheriff. You know, no one's probably ever thought about this before, but who is running for sheriff? Are they really honest policemen? Well, there might be honest policemen running, but who's getting the funding?
Remember the honest one down in Arizona who said to the feds, we're not going to allow you to pull your scam down here in Arizona, and mysteriously he was eliminated, Eric. They got rid of the guy. Physically, they got rid of him.
Oh, I can't remember that one. But, yeah, see, this Paris Hilton thing. See, every time these people do something, They identify themselves, and we've got to take advantage of it. This Lee Baca sheriff, this is something we have to take seriously. This could be why certain sheriffs get publicity in the media. You have to ask yourself, why would the media promote a particular person as the candidate for sheriff and not another? Who are they promoting? And is it a coincidence that they pick one person over another? We've got to start looking at these sheriffs. They could be just like George Bush's, just like John Kerry, just like Al Gore. They're just puppets. And then once they get in there, they can then influence the rest of the police department. And the police are probably not even suspecting that this sheriff is a Zionist agent, just a puppet following orders.
Well, that did happen in the Omaha case of this investigation that DeCamp was involved in. And when you looked at who was in the leadership role of this of the Omaha Police Department, it was Zionist Jews.
Yeah, so you see, electing somebody like Ron Paul, what good's it going to do if our police departments are all infiltrated and everything else is infiltrated? The police have to start looking closely at their own departments. They've got to start looking at their leaders.
Yeah.
They've got to get rid of them. They need to start arresting them. And then you think about what we've got to do. We've got to basically throw this country in the trash and start over. It's so infiltrated. It's so bad.
And see, you know, it doesn't take 50 million people to control the world. What it takes is a million or 2 million people with influence to control the world.
Yeah, easily, because, you know, one sheriff, he has a whole police department. And then that sheriff, if he's only following orders, the person who's giving him orders may have five other sheriffs that he's giving orders to. And so it doesn't take an enormous amount. You see, if these people are just puppets, all you have to do is give them an order once in a while.
Well, so, it always seems, too, Eric, that they find ways of making their controller, the people they control, be self-supporting as well.
You mean financially?
Well, yeah, they figure out ways that these people they put in power can actually skim from the system they've been put in charge of.
Yeah, well,
like Dov Zolkheim.
Yeah, what I think what they do is, my guess is that this Zionist movement has the attitude that their agents are pretty much on their own to make their own money and support themselves. They might occasionally get some funding. But you'll see them complaining, like, you know, that Andrew Mathis will complain, oh, well, if I work for the Zionists, how come they don't pay me? You know, he makes stupid remarks like that. You'll see this a lot from them. They'll say, well, they sure aren't paying me very much if I'm a Zionist agent. Well, that doesn't mean anything. They may not pay a lot of their people. They may tell them, you make a living, and at the same time, you know, you're going to support the Zionist movement. Like that Scott Mafkaka guy.
Yep.
He may have had to, you know, the reason he was working as a taxi driver may have been because he wasn't getting any funding. And they may have told him, if you expect to get some money from us, you first do something. You first make your own way. And if you're successful, then maybe you'll do it. You'll see this the same thing with the Italian gangs. They didn't just take a person in as a high-level member. He had to earn it. He had to do something. He had to first make an enormous amount of money through crime. They didn't just pick somebody. And the same may be true of the Zionist movement. These low-level people we see, the Scott Mafkakas and the Andrew Mathises, those people may be told, you know, if you expect to be part of this organization, you're going to have to do something for it. We're not just going to give you money.
Well, you know, this brings me to the next level where there are people that have been moved quite high up on the ladder. People like the Larry Ellisons of the world and the Mark Cubans of the world. And we take a look at Mark Cuban's recent foray into financing of Alex Jones's stuff and some others, and Loose Change is getting money from them. And then you take a look at the other things that they've worked with, and all of them that Mark Cuban and this other Zionist are involved in vulgar, sick productions. And, of course, I want to talk after we discuss those this guy, just how they promote vulgarity and the degradation of moral values within the community.
Well, yeah, you see, Mark Cuban, see, he made it. He's not a Scott Mafkaka who's driving a cab around. He made it, and so they might take him in. You'll see the same thing. If you look at the BBC had a documentary on this, the Italian gangs. This is what their attitude is. It's like an animal type situation where you make it on your own first. You do something. You know, they don't give you welfare. The gangs are, there's no sympathy with these people. So people like Scott and Andrew Mathis, you know, they may be regarded as the losers. You know, Mark Cuban, on the other hand, he made it. And so he may be in the, he may be part of the group now. And you'll see the same with some of the other people that made it. So you, if you look at the Italian gangs, you may get an idea of what is going on with the Zionist gang. It may be the same situation.
Well, the money men behind the Italian gangs has always been the Zionist Jews anyway.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying the way they get to be picked for, you know, who gets up there in the top.
But isn't it interesting that even if you pick the Dominican drug gangs of the 1980s and 90s, or the Puerto Rican drug gangs, or if you come over here to France, we have drug gangs from Guyana and whatnot. But at the top of that, if you look behind it, the producers of the drugs and the real money makers of the drug trade come from the same community. So ultimately, the big profiteering that goes on goes back to them anyway.
Yeah, and see, this is another thing that people don't realize, the difference between Zionism and the Italian organized crime gangs. There is one other significant difference. And that is, you know, the Italian gangs were just losers, basically. They were just losers that, you know, decided to become gang members. The Zionist movement attracts a lot of people. Some of them, you could say, are just typical losers, like Meyer Lansky, that decided to get into crime. But some of them are getting in for political reasons. And so the movement itself, the Zionist movement, has a lot more of what you might call normal people, a lot more intelligent people. And so they are a much more difficult gang to deal with. They're not just a bunch of jerks like those Italian gangs who are, you know, threatening to break your legs if you don't give them some money.
Well, Eric, you know, everybody on their way up the ladder wants to hobnob with the power elite. And if the power elite is coming from a specific group or community, you're going to be barking to the orders of your masters. And those masters happen to be from this group.
Yeah, and see, then you get a lot of people who don't really understand what it is, and they'll support it without fully understanding what it is, because it sounds like a nice concept. If you listen to just the concept of a homeland for Jews, you know, a homeland for anybody sounds great. Homeland for Catholics, a homeland for Norwegians sounds great. It's only when you think about it and you look at who is in it and what they do that you realize, you know, there's something wrong with this group. We don't need this group. We don't want this group. If you don't look at it very closely, you can understand why a lot of people would end up supporting it.
Yeah. Well, it looks like they're on the ropes, and it looks like the work that you and I and others like us have done to expose them has bore fruit, Eric. We've done our intended work here. Now, what's the next phase here? What do we have to do now?
Well, that's a good question. If we can continue to do is just get this information out, and it seems like we are winning because I don't think they can get this war with Iran going. I don't think there's any support. Even though people don't seem to want to do anything to stop this Zionist movement, just making them realize what's going on is having an effect, because it's causing people to lose interest in the war, and it's causing them to become suspicious of a war with Iran, and that will block their attempts. You see, even if people don't do anything to stop them, if the public just becomes less interested in supporting them, that right there is going to hurt them. Because let's say they do another one of these false flag operations and the people don't react. Then they're in trouble, because then they've done it. The people don't react. They expose themselves again, and it may get to the point where the police even get brave enough to start rebelling against them and arresting them.
Well, it seems to me that because of the financial problems that are on the direct horizon, I don't see them far off. There's going to be all kinds of new kinds of pressures being exerted here, Eric. And as people's ability to pay their own bills becomes they become less capable, some people are going to crawl up into a little ball and whimper, but there's going to be a segment, a group of people who want to know who did this to them, and they're going to want a pound of flesh for their suffering. And I'm hoping that, where our story can still be being told when these people are looking for who did it.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, if it gets to that point, because the economy, what people don't realize is you'll keep hearing reports about how good the jobs are and the economy is doing great, but you have to look at what those jobs are. Government jobs, insurance jobs, health care, they're nothing that you make a living from. What they are is parasitic jobs. Other people have to support them, and that's going to cause tuition to rise, insurance to rise, taxes to rise. The American economy is deteriorating. There's no matter how you look at it, it's been going on for years, and it's nothing to stop it. There's no way except changing the country dramatically is going to change this. So we are headed into potential problems, or it may just deteriorate into a third world nation, but we are heading into problems here.
Well, Eric, I'm calling for people to start examining all options of change. And I want people to start looking at the idea that, you may have to take what you want in effect. In other words, you're going to have to start looking at ways of fixing this. And I don't think you're going to be able to just ask them to turn over their power to you. I think we're going to have to just take it back.
And it may be that America has to deteriorate a little bit further before this even happens, because they're still resisting it. But it may happen. And see, I don't think it's going to be that difficult to do it. To take it back is not that difficult. We outnumber them by so much. The police themselves, this is what's so sad. The police departments themselves could just put an end to it. All they have to do is to start arresting a few of them.
Well, they're not immune to the truth either. I mean, the police go home and get on the internet too, Eric, and they have the capacity to sift through nonsense and sift through horse manure and the rest of it. And there's going to be a growing move within the police departments to have justice.
Well, we can hope. Let's hope so. And the military too. You'd think they would get sick of it after a while. So, but it wouldn't take much. I don't think it would even take much in the way of violence. I mean, if they just think about it, if they just started picking up a few people like Larry Silverstein and a couple of the Bronfmans and a couple of the Newhouses and some of the Redstone. I mean, it wouldn't take very many for them to start creating panic in the Zionist movement. Because what do you think? Do you really think Larry Silverstein's going to pull out a gun and say, "Yeah, come and get me"? I mean, there's no way. There might be some people within the movement that will fight to the death, but, most of them are going to realize, okay, it's over. Let's just get out of here, and they may just start scattering, running somewhere and hiding. But I don't think it would be that difficult to stop it.
Well, I hope so, Eric. I mean...
The only thing I think our biggest problem is that they go on their doomsday plan. Because who created that plan? Remember when we were kids, we had this
mutual assured destruction.
Who created that? At the time I didn't think much of it, but now you look at it, it may have come from the Zionist Jews. That may be their plan, and that may be what they're threatening to do quietly in Israel. They may be threatening America. Oh yeah, you stand up to us, we're going to do that. We're going to self-destruct and take you with us, and take Europe with us. So that might be what they threaten everybody with, and they might even try to do it. This might be what the big problem with the military is.
They've got 400 warheads as far as on the last count that I read about.
Well, yeah, it's possible that they are threatening something to this effect. And you can see on the internet, they love promoting these possibilities of nuclear war. And you'll see in the Hollywood movies, too. They just love this concept of doomsday and the end of the world, and so it may be partly because of religious reasons too, but they might do that. That might be why the military is a little afraid. They may realize this is what they're thinking, or maybe they're being threatened quietly. But still, the military has to ask themselves: by doing nothing, we're not helping the situation either. We've got to do something.
Well. One of the things that I just witnessed here was that the central banks of the world, Eric, have run out of gold to sell. The last country that has any gold that they can really part with is Switzerland, and they're going to sell 250 tons of gold. But if you look at the world demand right now, that's not going to dent the demand in the world for gold. And so when people start seeing that inflation is actually four or five-fold higher than what they've been reporting. And, you can't even pay your gas bill to go to work anymore. I'm telling you, people are going to be mad. And I think it's not far off.
Well, yeah, it's possible. It's possible that, that this time there will be chaos. But I don't know. It's one of those things you can't – it's hard to predict because I've been surprised over and over at the passiveness of the people.
Well.
But you can tell they're getting more and more upset. You can just – so far, I don't know what's going to trigger something.
You know, they talk about this guy Brown, and I don't know if the Browns are – I mean, I don't know anything about them. I do know that Alex Jones is using them, and I do know that most of the vitriol and the encouraging to be violent and all the nonsense comes from Jones. When I hear these guys interviewing Alex Jones interviewing the Browns, he's like, they're going to kill you, and you're going to kill back, aren't you? Yeah, aren't you? You know?
Well, see, the Browns, that IRS group, whatever that state is, New Hampshire or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, this is another one. Boleyn gets taken away. No one says a thing. This case gets so much publicity. And what is it about, really? It's not about deal with this IRS and this central bank and Zionism. I mean, no, it's they're going to get us. You know, one guy claims to have been shot at as he walked down his driveway with a cup of coffee. Remember that one? I don't know if you heard that.
Well, he may have been.
Well, yeah, but then you look at what it was all about. It looks like another setup. Like it was all staged because the guy who shot at him deliberately said, "Oh, I wasn't trying to hit you." It's like, what's the point then? You know, it looks like they're just deliberately creating this fear that, oh, you better not stand up to the government or you're going to get shot at and they're going to come and get you. And then at the same time, it's a way to distract people from things like what happened with Boleyn and what's happening with the war. And it's this fear again. Again, all you have to do is tell people that said, no, we're sick of this. We want the IRS investigated. We want to know, is it really a scam? That's all people have to do.
Well, I will remind everybody that back 7 or 8 years ago, Alex Jones did an interview with a couple that was actually pulling a standoff, and he went in their house, and then as soon as he got outside, he gave everybody the information about how the house was all set up, and told the news crew about how they were guarding their windows and what weapons they had and the whole bit. And turned around and ratted these people out. And boy, it's still on the internet from the family who got ratted out. They told the story afterwards. They said, this guy, Jones, came out and told everybody what we had to protect ourselves with.
Well, that might be what they're doing here with this Ed Brown. Is first, they could use it for so many ways. They might be exposing him and setting him up. And at the same time, they're creating fear among everybody else.
Yeah.
And it's a distraction also. So they can gain in a lot of different ways from just one little incident like this.
And, you know, you start seeing who works together, like Rivero and stuff. And why doesn't Rivero take these issues any place? He's got a huge soapbox. He puts up a lot of stuff that has relevance, but yet he goes nowhere with it. In other words, he sits there and almost treats it in a nonchalant manner so that people are going to stay and say, well, you know, maybe he'll fix the problem or something, but he doesn't. He doesn't do anything to change anything.
No, it's just talk. It's just like Alex. He'll talk and then tell you they're going to get chipped. But they don't ever encourage you to do something. They don't ever encourage you to say no to these people. They don't encourage you to realize you don't have to put up with this nonsense, that we can make things better. That's what they don't want people to realize, that we're not helpless, that we can change it. All you have to do is look at history. Look at the improvements that have been made in the human race over the past few centuries. You know, we don't have to live in fear. We don't have to spend our lives just chasing after money and sitting in front of a television set and putting up with who they decide to vote for. We can deal with this. We can just get some more people to stop being frightened.
Well, let's talk for the last subject here, Eric, about the media and about television for a moment. You don't watch TV, do you?
Hardly. The only time I've seen it is if I just want to see what they happen to say. You know, it's like going to a Drudge or something, or 9/11.
Well, I stop by and visit with my loving wife when she's watching a sitcom or she's watching some kind of programming. But fortunately, we have over 300 channels here, so she's usually watching recipes or something, how to do something positive, gardening show or whatever. But I don't watch it. And the fact is, because I don't watch it, I don't get this emotional infiltration that happens with television. And, you know, when you've been away from that idiot box long enough, you are shocked when you sit in front of it, the vulgarity of it, and the propaganda that is being spewed. And when you bring it up to people who watch it all the time, they don't notice it.
Oh, that's true. People don't realize it. If you go, you have to go a couple years without it, I think, and without magazines and newspapers, and then look at the television. I've heard the same thing happened to me.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah, and I've heard it from other people, too. But when you grow up with it, it becomes normal to you. You see, it's the same thing when you raise children around these all these strange Hollywood movies. You know, they grow up believing, you know, all this violence, and that to them it's normal, that behavior, that what they see, the cars blowing up and these giant fireballs and... You know, it's like they're preparing them all for the Iraq war or something. And they don't think anything strange about it.
Yep.
But if you just get away from it and stay away from all the propaganda and then look at it after a while, then you realize it is a bunch of lies. But it's hard to explain to somebody who grew up with it.
Well, and it's hard to explain to somebody who's sitting in front of that TV set 5, 6, 7 hours a day. I mean, people get home from work at 5 or 6 o'clock, and that TV stays on blabbing all in, you know, in their house for several hours a day, Eric.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know, to some people, that's their only entertainment and their only friend. So it's just, but people should realize, you know, this is the sign of problems when you're doing this. They shouldn't be doing it. They should be thinking, what's wrong? Let's try to make things better.
Yeah.
They don't react the right way. You know, they should be reacting by thinking, you know, do we have to live like this? Is this what human life is?
No.
We don't have to put up with this. This media, people have to realize this is deliberate manipulation, abuse. These people are the criminals, and that's why these crimes just go on and on and on. That's why if you look at what they say about the Boleyn trial case, you only get a little bit, and it's always the wrong side. And the same with the terrorist activities. You only get their side of the terrorism. You don't get anything. It's not honest.
No. Well, you know, where we're at, you know, this date, this time in history, Eric, we're at a point right now. It's a crossroads. It certainly is, in my view, a CAFOR or a crossroads in life. And I see that the human family is finally asking the right questions, whether or not we're going to be able to scream loud enough for them to hear some of the right answers is another question. But I see that we've been helpful in doing it, and so many other people are still, you know, they're working on our behalf. Just take a look at the website lately, people making videos and making, I encourage people to make videos with the French Connections interviews on it. I mean, somebody wants to do something about what we just talked about and put together one of these great little videos. They're really powerful and they're really hard hitting. It's, we can do things to make this better known, can't we?
Yeah, and somebody was saying maybe we can make one of those little wiki encyclopedias on the internet, too, if somebody wants to get that going. There's a lot of things people can do. Just take out little excerpts and add video or images to them and put them on YouTube. There are things people can do. That's what they have to realize. They're not helpless. So stop feeling helpless. Stop hiding under chairs and do something. That's all.
Or to put IamTheWitness.com on a slip of paper and say, you want the facts? IamTheWitness.com, and just leave it on the subway or leave it on a bus or leave it at the water cooler or leave it at a park bench or leave it anywhere you want to leave it, but get it out there. Somebody came up with the idea of getting a stamp that they can stamp dollar bills with IamTheWitness.com, which is another great way of getting this out there. I mean, there's so many things that can be done. That dollar bill one with a stamp, geez, if you just went and got $50 bills and stamped them, they probably pass through 1,000 or 1,500 hands.
Yeah, it's possible. You just have to, people have to, just have to try different things and see what might work. And just try to get the information out and try to encourage other people. Don't give them the fear. Just try to encourage people to, you know, show them that we can deal with it. We can discuss the issues.
Yeah, and the last thing I want everybody to know, you know, if you start seeing somebody trying to destroy the person and not ever bringing up the work they did, you should be very suspicious. In other words, if you take a look at what they've been trying to do to both me, you, and Boleyn, it's never been about the work that we've done. It's always about us. And see, if you see that, you should hear, bells should go off in your head, because this is the first sign that that this is a hit job and has nothing to do with reality. And if you look at our work, it's beyond reproach, Eric, and in almost every single thing we've ever discussed, it nails it. But they don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about, you know, anything other than that.
Well, yeah, people need to recognize the difference between insults and serious analyses. And that's the other thing that separates us from them. They've got insults. We've got real analyses.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. It's been a great hour. For those of you who don't know who's been singing the last couple of shows, his name is Michel Figon. Michel Figon, and it's a Sucre Salé is the name of the album. I've got maybe 15 or 20 different emails about it, and we didn't put it on the website. Michel Figon, and he doesn't sing very much anymore. That's about a 10-year or 12-year-old CD, I think, or even more, maybe. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith and Eric Hufschmidt saying be well. Bye-bye now.